on most smart speakers.
Ask to open BBC Sounds and play Desert Island Discs.
Or listen on your television.
Make yourself a cup of tea and put your feet up.
And if you need to pop out, keep listening in the car.
So you won't miss a single pick from this week's Castaway.
The second I hear it, it brings me such great inner peace and reminds me of happiness at all my ages.
Music, radio and podcasts. Everywhere you are. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, Mark Steele's In Town.
Oh yeah, I know a good fact about Salisbury.
It's a very small city.
We call it Smallsbury.
Yeah. I know.
I can't think of a local landmark.
Cathedral.
Old Sarum, I think, is my favourite.
Stonehenge.
You can walk around the outside and not pay. Horton Down. I don't know anybody that works at Horton Down, but it's shrouded in secrecy.
She'd know when they were testing because she'd come out in spots.
If I told you that, I'd have to kill you.
I've said too much already.
Because of the Novichok incident, we're not allowed to pick up any litter.
Smallsbury.
Everyone thinks we're posh.
Superior to Winchester.
It's nice.
Mark Steele's In Town.
To Mark Steele's In Town, which this week comes from the beautiful city of Salisbury in Wiltshire. Wiltshire, a county that is mostly a huge army base, saying, "Don't worry, Salisbury, we'll protect you from Swindon." Because this is a genteel town that is never in the news, except maybe when otters are discovered in the cathedral or it's the target of international espionage. It's just a jolly city where nothing happens. Now, I'm not sure, Salisbury, if you know what you want to be. In the marketplace, for example, there are all these food and drink stalls set up and there's a sign that says street food and then the first stall is a Pim's tent. One of the messages that I was sent about Salisbury went, "I once got mugged outside Sainsbury's for a coconut." People think it's all cathedral this and Magna Carta that, but see, there's a dark underbelly. But you like to present a certain image, Salisbury. I bought a book called 50 Historic Buildings of Salisbury, and on one page it says, "St Anne's Gate is a canonry where the composer Handel gave his first public concert," and then, "Bishop's Gate is a Grade 1 listed building with a four-centred arch." Are there any normal buildings here? There's the Royal School of Church Music, the Royal Artillery Rifle Museum, or a plaque that says, "This house is where eggs were invented." A measure of what this place is like is in a book called 50 Historic Buildings of Salisbury. It doesn't even mention Stonehenge. This is the only place I've been to where every building seems to have something written on it in Latin. I bet most of you look at a sign that says TK Maxx and stand there for 20 minutes working out... working out what year it meant that was built. So you think you've worked out what Salisbury is all about, and then you see a headline on the Salisbury Police Facebook page that goes, "Man urinates in container and leaves it in Salisbury Library." And next week there'll be a plaque up there. I was walking by Arundel House and it is idyllic and tranquil, and then there were these four teenage boys on the green by the cathedral, and as I walked past this beautiful English vista, I heard one of them say to his mates, I said, "If you don't apologise right now, you're getting knocked out." Because I don't think you're sure you know what you want to be. I love that corner. I've been past there four times, and each time the beauty of the cathedral is enhanced by the wondrous scent of teenage skunk. And I don't think you can appreciate a tall spire without drugs. Stonehenge, of course, is at the centre of a great mystery that has puzzled generations, which is why everybody thinks it's in Salisbury when it's 8 miles away in Amesbury. How did you wangle that? Is your publicity done by Ryanair? So every day, people arrive in Salisbury station thinking, "I wonder if it's right outside. I can't see it. Excuse me, can you tell me where the famous stones are? 8 miles! And then they have to get a special bus that creeps along the A345 for 40 minutes that's more of a palaver than it was for those Neolithic people who dragged the stones there in the first place. Because that's the sort of thing that happens in entitled Middle England. Stonehenge is ours, you know. Of course, we don't have it in the area, then we'd have to look after it. We send it away, we have an Amesbury to clean it and wipe it down. I wonder if people from Amesbury go to see Stonehenge, so they get a train to Salisbury, then have to get a bus back to where they started. So it's always quiet here. Would you say it's always quiet here?
Yeah.
No? The vicar was rather robust one Sunday. I saw a local website where someone asked if it was quiet, and this was the answer. On Saturday nights about 8 p.m, it can be noisy. And after the pubs close, it can be rough. Greencroft and the town path are best avoided at night. The lighting isn't good, so make sure you're accompanied by a friend and not a weirdo. Something I've noticed that you are really keen on here is that your car park's always shut on time. In the multi-storey in the centre, when I first come here to look round, right, there are notices everywhere saying, "This car park shuts promptly at 8. I have never seen such an angry sign. No wonder it gets noisy about 8. There are hundreds of people screaming, "Quick! The car park's about to shut! Oh, Jesus! I don't want to get locked in again! Ah!" And almost as impressive as your Waitrose is the second biggest building in the city, the cathedral, with reputedly the tallest spire in Britain. It can be seen from hundreds of miles away, this thing. It's vast. I imagine if God could speak to you, he'd say, "That's a bit more than what you need, isn't it, Salisbury?" According to my history and guidebook, for a while, the spire wasn't as tall as the one in Malmesbury, so it wasn't even the tallest spire in Wiltshire. Luckily, the Malmesbury one blew down in a storm. So you went back ahead, and then St Paul's was taller, but then that spire burnt down, and so was the one at Canterbury. That was taller than yours, but that one burnt down as well. No one dare build one taller because of your dark underbelly.
I hear there's going to be a taller spire in Winchester. I don't think so.
So you've got an absolutely massive cathedral with this huge, tall spire. And we're lucky to have with us Trish, who is the deputy head guide.
Yeah.
Why is it so huge? Like, there are places that are bigger towns that have a smaller cathedral, such as Rome. Was it mostly to beat Winchester?
Definitely. I lost a very expensive bottle of red wine saying that Salisbury's nave was longer than Winchester's. It's just...
Oh, that is so Salisbury. You do have betting, but it's not in the horses, it's on who's got the longest nave. Well, I was looking up at the pillars, and what's happening to them?
Right, so the cathedral was built in 38 years, from 1220 to 1258. But then they thought, we've only got a stumpy tower, let's build a great big spire. So they added the tower and spire on about 50 years later. That extra 6,500 tons, the pillars at the central crossing just went, oh, no, no, no. And so they're bending.
So they've been bending for about 500 years?
Just about, yeah. So, you know, if you see any guides running, run after them. But...
You all know about this. Do you know about the dipstick thing? Do you want to tell us about that, Trish? That's an amazing thing to see in a cathedral.
Well, they all said they know about it.
Well, they do, but the thing with the radio is it goes out to other people who aren't inside. In Trish's defence, I bet you were all thinking that, but surely nobody outside Salisbury listens to Radio 4. Surely it's a station entirely dedicated to the people of Salisbury, isn't it? I often wondered why they had the shipping forecast. South East Iceland is nowhere near Salisbury.
The dipstick, OK. The cathedral's about 100,000 tonnes of building material, and we've only got 4 feet of foundations, and below that is 27 feet of compacted gravel with water running through it. And the dipstick, we put it down into a borehole to show visitors the water. And the principle of that, if you go to the beach and the sand's dry, if you try and build a sandcastle, it falls over. But add a bit of water to it and you get a really firm surface.
So you've got to have just the right amount of water.
Yep.
And if there isn't the right amount of water...
it'll fall down.
Right. I love the way it's just laughed off. If it was a council flat, it would be condemned.
Yeah.
Tell us about the bumping stone. What's that?
The bumping stone. Well, Salisbury's had a boys' choir for over 1,000 years. When the cathedral boys are made up as full choristers, there's a stone in one of the aisles in the cathedral where they get the head bumped 7 times on it.
And you know, this is... Not only would that be illegal under the European Court of Human Rights, that would be illegal under the Magna Carta that is right next to where it happened. No, it's brilliant. I do love it. It's an amazing building, the cathedral. Every corner has some amazing stained glass window. In one corner is one of 4 surviving documents of the Magna Carta. And it costs £9 to get into the cathedral, unless you're from Salisbury. And then you tell them your postcode and you go around for free. And if you're from Amesbury, it's 35 quid. But here's an account of one visitor from Tom Golding, and the headline on his blog said, "I just showed Jay-Z around my local church." Do you know this happened? The blog goes on, "Tables of tea and biscuits lined the cloisters, streams of Home Counties OAPs filed past, all of them greeted the cathedral's dean, blanking Jay-Z, apart from the occasional intrigued glance." I expect there was the odd one who said, "He's a singer," and whacked him over the head with a bumping stone. Salisbury isn't just about history, it's still important now. I was sent a message that when everyone in Salisbury knows someone who is allegedly something big at Poulton Down. I was hoping to speak to someone at Poulton Down, but it's strange, nobody knows anything about it. Poulton Down is the scientific research base run by the Ministry of Defence. So you hear people say, "My brother works there and he says they've been paying people £30 each to sit in this bath of green stuff and now they've all got the heads of a walrus." Does anybody here know people who work there?
Yes.
You all know someone who works there?
Yes.
Do any of you work there? It's spooky. I didn't go round, I went past. It's admitted that over 30,000 experiments have been carried out there. What experiments? Is no one here bothered? Are you all in on it? No wonder you seemed so calm when the Russians came here with poison. A gentle breeze from Poulton Down and you get much stronger stuff than Novichok just landing on your sandwich. But strangely, even though no one likes to speak about it, lots of people have advised me, "Don't mention Poulton Down. My neighbour knew someone who heard they invented COVID in there and they were carrying it in a box to China and dropped it and it leaked out and that's how it started. And a man in a white suit came up to my neighbour's mate in the white art and told him not to tell anyone, but he did tell people at a barbecue and the next day he blew up in an accident with a Catherine wheel. So make of that what you will." But there is something else about Salisbury which is amazing, which is that the whole city was moved. Because Salisbury used to be called Old Sarum, which was 2 miles up the road on top of a hill, and there was an Iron Age fort, and then the Romans developed it before William the Conqueror came here from Winchester and officially recognised it. And then in 1226, the whole place was just demolished completely, and everyone started again down here. And now there are coach trips to Old Sarum, and it's £6.60 to get in. So you deserve immense credit, Salisbury, for making Old Sarum a tourist attraction when the thing that makes it interesting is there's nothing there. And people seem happy to say, "We paid £6.60 and it was excellent value because there's literally nothing. There's just a field with nothing. It's amazing. You stand there thinking there used to be something here, but it wouldn't have been worth visiting then because there was something there. Now there's nothing, so I'll be sure to come again." The tourist guide boasts the site offers a spectacular view of Salisbury. So they even convince people to leave the place where there are things, to pay, to get into the place that has nothing, so that you can look back at the place where you started that has something. And when you're in actual Salisbury, you already have a view of Salisbury for free. The old Sarum website says, why not take out membership from £53? Yes, why not? And then you can go and see nothing whenever you like. While I was up there, I noticed a sign on the car park that said, this car park shuts promptly at 4 p.m. Don't take too long looking at where you've just come from that has something, or you won't be able to get back there. It is fascinating why the city was moved. There's a variety of theories, but the one that seems most common is the wind was so strong that sometimes divine offices could not be heard. So they moved the entire city because up on top of the hill, it was windy. So the bishop had to decide where the new city should be, and according to the Visit Wiltshire website, the story has it that an archer based at Old Sarum decided where to build the city by shooting an arrow into the valley, and wherever the arrow landed would be the centre of the new city. And he was actually facing the other way, but the wind was so strong it blew the arrow back over his head down here, and that's how this ended up as Salisbury. And the saddest part is if they had moved Salisbury the other way, they would have put it in Amesbury, which would have been much more handy for Stonehenge. When they worked out where to go, they had to dismantle the whole cathedral, and they took it down here to the new site bit by bit, a task that was hard enough but made even harder because every day the labourers would come down the hill with piles of masonry in a barrow and see the gates were locked as it was almost four. One thing that many people do know about Old Sarum is it's another way of saying something is corrupt in democracy, because Old Sarum used to elect 2 members of parliament even though there were only 11 voters, and even they didn't live there. And for hundreds of years, Old Sarum has been a symbol for rottenness in democracy, though we'll probably be back there in a couple of years. But everything seems to be full of history in Salisbury. I went in the pub, the Haunch of Venison, and I opened the old wooden door, and as I walked in, there was a bloke right in front of me with a pipe in front of the fire, and he just went, good day. This pub is the finest in Salisbury. It's been here for 701 years. OK. And then I noticed that in the corner of the pub is a mummified hand in a glass case. And the hand belonged to a gambler, and it was chopped off because he was cheating at cards. And a man whose name is not recorded is said to have told him, if you don't apologise, you're getting your hand chopped off right now. Do you all know about the Haunch of Venison?
Yes.
And the mummified hand?
Yes.
Pubs in other towns have a dartboard. Of course the pub is supposed to be haunted, of course it is. Normally I take no notice of that sort of thing, but I wouldn't be surprised with that place to find an account from 1323 of a man going through the wooden door, and there's a bloke with a pipe in front of the fire who says, good day, this is the finest pub in Salisbury. It's been here 2 years. There's so much here, Salisbury. Right, how many people know about the Giant and the Hobnob? Some fans of the Giant and the Hobnob. The Giant and Hobnob are in the museum. The Giant is about 10 feet tall and looks like Demis Roussos. And the Hobnob is a half-man, half-donkey creature. And they were created in the 1500s by tailors of the city. And the BBC website says, as a symbol of the guild, the Giant was ideal for exhibiting the clothing that the tailors produced. What sort of clothes were they making? The most popular theory as to why Giant and Hobnob were created here is they were actual people who went missing around Porton Down. And when they came back, that's what they looked like. Now, this is true. I went in a gift shop here. I wanted to get a Giant and Hobnob mug. So I said, have you got a Giant and Hobnob mug? And she said, what? You know the Giant? I swear this is true. I said, you know the Giant? And she went, is that tall fella? But Of course there is odd behaviour here, because one of the world's most celebrated mystical religious monuments is right here, 8 miles away by an entirely different town. Do you often visit it?
Yes.
I went there. It's a brilliant day out. A lot of people complain when they're there. They go, oh, it's not as big as I thought they'd be. And they've got a point, because those lazy Neolithic bastards can't drag any stones bigger than that. Historians and the time team people and archaeologists have tried to work out exactly where they did come from, but hardly anyone knows where they are now, because everyone thinks they're in Salisbury when they're in Amesbury. There have been so many books written about Stonehenge, arguing what it was for. Many people wonder why these primitive people who had only meagre resources spent so much time and energy building a huge religious monument. But luckily, the people of Salisbury learnt their lesson and never made that mistake again. I think the most amazing thing about Stonehenge is just that it's been there so long. In 200 BC, people must have arrived there and there was a bloke who said, this is the finest Druid monument in Wiltshire. It's been here 2,981 years. In the 1990s, Stonehenge became a centre of political turmoil. All the New Age people and travellers were banned. There was a 4-mile exclusion zone set up around it, and this meant that the government was saying, this is a sacred site dedicated to spreading positive energy and must be preserved, so anyone who goes near it will be frazzled with an electric fence and walloped with a cosh. Although if you were walloped with a cosh, you were immediately inducted into the Stonehenge choir. And lots of people stood out against this. Most prominently, a Salisbury man who calls himself Arthur Pendragon, who's convinced that he's King Arthur. There's a lovely book about Salisbury's Arthur called The Life and Times of a Modern Day King that tells of Arthur's early life. And I love this bit. Arthur stood in the middle of the ancient stones when something came at him out of the darkness. It was a big black raven and its wing touched his face. It was as if something priest-like had laid a hand upon him. And he asked himself, what if I am really King Arthur? And to be fair, when a bird comes past, the only explanation that makes sense is that you are King Arthur. So it is a great pleasure to me to introduce to you Arthur Pendragon. Hello, Arthur. Yeah. Arthur, can I start by humbly saying that you are the first king that we've had on this programme?
Yeah. Cheers. My name's Arthur Pendragon. I'm generally known as King Arthur. I'm a Druid chieftain, which means I'm a king of one of the Druid orders. That's all.
That's all?
That's all. Yeah, it's not a big...
There's quite a phrase after that.
Yeah. There's three Arthurs, and there's three Arthurian ages. There's a pre-Roman archetypal Welsh, there's a post-Roman Dark Age British, and there's a post-Thatcher, and I'm the post-Thatcher.
I have so many questions to ask you. You got a sword when you realised that you were fulfilling your destiny. You got a sword.
I got a sword. It's called Excalibur.
So you were in court, and according to the book, Arthur was told he couldn't bring his sword into the courtroom.
If you think about it, I'm a Druid sword bearer, so I have the right to bear a sword. There's a clue in the name, sword bearer. The reality is I won, and now, if you are a Druid king, you can take Excalibur into court, and you can swear instead of the Bible. Oh, and another thing I won was the right for pagan prisoners to wear their robes in the privacy of their own cell. I had to go naked on the block to win that one.
Yes, I was going to read this bit out. Yeah. This is from the book. You take a sword off a Druid sword bearer and you make him naked. You want naked, and he removed his robe to stand naked. This earned him the title of the 10th most outrageous person in Britain, according to Loaded magazine.
Yeah, that was at the Royal Courts of Justice. I mean, they wouldn't let me in with me sword because I was going to swear on it. So, yeah, that's what I said. And as soon as I took the robe off, they changed their mind and let me in. If they ruled against me, they'd have to rule against all the other sword bearers. Of every lodge has a sword bearer, etc. So they'd be ruling against themselves.
I'll give it to you, Arthur. You have made it sound utterly plausible that we should all go round with a sword.
I convinced them.
How many times did you reckon you've been arrested?
I've been arrested a number of times, mainly over environmental issues, but I did have a rather infamous barrister at one stage. I was in Salisbury Magistrates Court here as the very first arrest for the new offence of trespassery assembly. And the young barrister who assisted me went on to take the government to the European Court at Strasbourg, where I won, and that's why we no longer have the exclusion zone. And that young barrister is now the leader of Her Majesty's opposition. Not that he's opposed as much these days, but it was Keir Starmer.
So you launched Keir Starmer's career, aren't you?
He helped me when he was a young barrister.
If he becomes Prime Minister, you're going to call in any favours?
Yeah, I'll try.
Right, I've got one more question to ask you here. Right, so how many times have you stood for election?
I've stood here in every single general election since in the late 80s, and every time I've increased my vote. I haven't won my deposit back yet, but who knows, I may do, because I'll be standing again in 2 years, and hopefully some of these nice people will be voting for me.
Yeah, no, they will. Thank you so much to Arthur. I think it's a shame, the biggest shame is that they don't bring back the old rules about voting in old Sarum, because Arthur could stand there and win easily. I think Arthur suits Salisbury, and to be fair to him, he only changed his name. You change your name and the entire location of the city. And maybe it's that spirit that attracted your most dramatic tourists in recent years, the Russians, because Putin's agents came here to assassinate an enemy and they were caught. And according to The Guardian, the one called Alexander Petrov explained the reason for coming here as, "Our friends had been suggesting for a long time we visit this wonderful town. We went to Cathedral in Winchester, but it was shit cathedral." "Its spire is not big, it disappoint much." "And you know what else I wouldn't put past them, being agents of Putin? I bet in the cathedral they claimed they lived here to get out of the £9 entrance fee." "They probably said, we live in St. Anne's Gate, it is canonry where composer Handel gave his first public concert." There was a BBC drama, did you see this, called The Salisbury Poisonings? Yeah. And while I was watching that, I thought, well, the rest of the world was watching this drama thinking, oh, my God, this is the brutality of Putin's agents. I expect some of you were going, oh, you can see the road where my sister used to live. So surely this whole episode was the perfect time, just as they were about to spread their novichok, for the Russians to look up and see someone scream, "Not so fast, for I am Arthur, true king of the Britons. Your powder is no match for Excalibur, my friend." So I shall leave you, Salisbury, with a section of the Magna Carta that you have in your possession that seems fitting to me that it is in this city. "By this notice shall the men of England be free to trade within a market, with a cafe at either end. Let all conflicts be resolved by peaceful means, for only if a guilty party shall refuse to apologise to the aggrieved, shall it be permissible to knock him out. Let all be bound by duty to protect this land from the hordes of Swindon. Let us learn from the rottenness of old Sarum, so that ne'er again shall the person who governs England be chosen by a handful of elderly lunatics. And let all be free to build a home and then knock it down and build it in another place, lest he be bewildered that there be wind upon the summit of a hill."
Mark Steele's In Town was written and performed by Mark Steele,
with additional material from Pete Sinclair.
It was produced in Salisbury by Carl Cooper
and was a BBC Studios production.
And next week, Mark will be in Newport, South Wales, worth knowing too that extended versions of all episodes in the current series will be available on BBC Sounds. And sticking with our touring theme, Cathy Clugston has been